Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
Meet Gail. Her thing is being a supermom. And supermom has a lot on her super-sized plate.
Ain't that the truth?
But at Walmart Pharmacy, supermom recently got her whole family updated on all their vaccines.
We knocked it out during a grocery run. No appointment.
That's next-level supermom. From pneumonia to shingles, HPV, and more, get no-cost vaccinations from an expert pharmacist where you already shop. Welcome to an easier pharmacy. Welcome to your Walmart. $0 copay with most insurances. State age and health restrictions may apply.
Hello and welcome back to Highway to Hoover, a production of SEC Extra over at D1Baseball.com. I'm your host, Joe Healy, joined as always by my good friend and co-host, Mark Etheridge. We're here to recap week 11 around the SEC. That's week 11, if you can believe it. 3 weeks of the regular season left. Then we all decamp to Hoover, where Mark and I will have our butts basically stapled to chairs for
cannot
hours
wait.
Upon. Yeah, which is not a complaint, by the way. Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. You know, there does come a time where you start to get real stiff and you've had way too much of the media buffet and you're starting to, you know, your body feels it. But we are that is not a complaint. Mark and I love that we get to do this. I don't want that to get misconstrued, but that is the reality of the situation.
A lot of session, sitting. I mean, the third day of four session days or four game days, that is when it starts to be a grind. But until then, we're pretty fired up. I mean, it'll be.
Yeah, Tuesday, and we got all kinds of energy Tuesday.
Oh, you know? It's like awesome.
We're all about it. Yeah, I can't play enough games on Tuesday. Let's play six, you know? yeah, but day three is a different deal. But regardless, we're coming down to the end of it here, and we're officially at that time of year where every win or loss, you can do the math in your head of like how many wins they need to get to X or Y or where they are in the pecking order for this or that, which is fun, but I imagine also has to be stressful for me because, you know, these coaches and players know the deal. And I'm not sure any league, I'm certain there is no other league in the country where the math for knowing what you need to get to certain milestones is more clear, right?
Yeah.
In every other conference, it feels a little like a moving target, but in the SEC, like for better or worse, because I think you can make arguments on both sides, it's very codified with what you need to get where.
Traditionally it is. And you know, it's funny you mentioned that because for much of my college baseball journalist career, people have asked me, well, what do we need to do to get in the field, right? And my immediate answer was, you need to do better than the other teams that you're being compared against. And that's a very unsatisfactory answer because no one likes that. So I've finally just given up on it, even though that's really true. I've finally just given up on it and go, yeah, if you need to be under 40 in the RPI, you need to have 13, preferably 14 wins. If you get to 14 wins, you can be under 40. If you're under 30, you can get to 13 and you got at least a fighter shot. It still depends on the bubble. It still depends on how many stolen bids there are. It still depends on what the other bubble teams do, but at least you've kind of got some sort of milestone to shoot for. And that's what we're facing, you know, for a lot of these teams as they come down the stretch.
Yeah, it's just, it's easy for me to say now because obviously I cover the SEC, not entirely exclusively, but you and I are, what, 90% that, right?
Yeah.
We do some other things here and there, such as Mark was at a great game between the Raging Cajuns and Southern Miss this past weekend, right? So, but he's even got a Raging Cajuns cup. Yeah, see, there it is. Yeah, shout out to UL. But, you know, before last couple of years, though, like I covered all of college baseball. And so even in that, in light of that, I can't really tell you what those standards are in the ACC or the Big 12 or the Pac-12, because they really do shift from year to year. You really can't put your finger on it in the same way you can in the SEC. And I think that's a testament to the quality of the SEC, where it's just kind of understood if you get to certain points along the road that you've basically met the minimum requirement for this or that. Whereas in the other leagues, there's a little more judging the quality of the league year to year. Like we tend to say these things like, oh, it's a good year in the pack, it's a bad year in the pack. Like the Big 12 is bad, the Big 12 is good, whatever, whatever. The SEC, yes, there are up and down years, but not to that same extent.
And I do think that, you know, that we're kind of testing that this year, because there are people, some within the league, mostly within the league, but some outside the league, who think that this is a different kind of SEC season, and that it should be measured differently, right? So there should be more leniency when you look at the top of the sport and how many SEC teams are there. And if you had to play all of those teams or the majority of those teams, maybe you should get a little bit of leeway, because no one's going to beat those teams or rarely. So if that's the case, and I don't know this committee's going to do this or not, but if it is, then maybe there's a little more wiggle room for certain teams that had to go through that gauntlet. And maybe instead of, you know, we talked about the 13 or 14, maybe a 12, you know, with other things to offset it, could get in. We'll see. And then the other part of this is the last year of that, because everything changes next year. All of this Nerdmaster General stuff that, you know, that everybody loves to, hey, Mark knows all of the history of this, and all that's going to change, because the leagues are continuing to expand. The SEC is going to have 16 teams instead of 14. The Pac-12 just vaporizes. All of those bids go somewhere, right? And we don't really know how that's going to shake out at this point. You would think that the power leagues, where those teams went to, will sort of each kind of absorb a few of those, but we don't know that. And we won't until we do this for several years and we kind of see how the power is going to shake out. So enjoy this year, because this is going to be the last year of the current iteration where all these historical trends matter. And we can learn something from them.
I do wonder, and then we'll actually move on after this thought. We'll move on to, I need to give us an ad read, and then we'll move on to the specifics of last weekend. But I do wonder if how good or not Texas and Oklahoma are in year one in the SEC will, for better or worse, kind of color how the committee approaches it, not just in that first year, but in subsequent years. Yeah. Because I can imagine a scenario where, let's say, you know, I think we kind of anticipate there might be an adjustment period for Oklahoma, even though they're, you know, right at the top of the Big 12 this year. But, and then Texas could be in a rebuilding year next year. And so if they're kind of just mediocre, average SEC teams, and there's a scenario where, okay, we're actually not going to get more, let's just say, we're actually not going to get more SEC teams this year than we have in the past, even though we've got a 16 team league, that could serve to maybe recodify the idea that, like, hey, you got to be really special as a league to get more than 10, because in 10 is kind of this ceiling, right? Or the flip side, right? Let Texas and Oklahoma are great right out of the jump, right out of the gate. They're top 15, top 20 teams. It could open up the floodgates to, hey, this should be okay. We're adding two good teams. So now the ceiling is at least 12, or the number is at least 12 teams, right? And then there could be a situation where the committee overlearns that lesson one way or the other, you know, and it kind of affects the way they look at it.
Well, one thought there is that the SEC has certainly become a destination for transfer players, and the best players in a lot of leagues are looking for opportunities. Many of them are to come into this league. There's about to be two more destinations. So that's, you know, if you're Texas and Oklahoma, not that they don't get them now, but it's going to be, I think, even more attractive, if that's even possible, for them to come in and grab some of these top players from elsewhere. So but again, this is all conjecture until we see it. But I do think that the SEC is only getting stronger. This is a really good year in the league. If you look at the top, look at the D1 poll, you look at the RPI, you look at whatever metric objective metric you want to find, you're going to be hard-pressed not to find a whole lot of SEC teams at the top of it. And I think that's going the committee can't ignore that. I think that as a result, you're going to find, you know, certainly you're going to find 10 SEC teams in. And if things fall right, depending on what happens with Florida, depending on what happens with LSU down the stretch, maybe even Ole Miss could get back into it. Maybe you could even, you know, do more than that. So it's going to be fascinating just to see how this all plays out.
We'll jump into the specifics of it, what happened last weekend and how that affects that big picture here in just a second. But first, I have to let you know that this episode of Highway to Hoover and every episode of Highway to Hoover is brought to you by Pitch Logic, the system used by players, coaches, scouts, and instructors at all levels of play from youth leagues to the big leagues. The easy-to-use and affordable technology makes the platform accessible to every player at every level. All the metrics and features used at the highest level. See pitchlogic.com for more information. All right, Mark, let's start with what I feel like, and you could tell me if I'm right or wrong on this in your opinion. What I felt like was the most impactful series with regards to postseason shifting and positioning and what have you, and that's Mississippi State winning their series on the road against Vanderbilt. Dramatic ending there. Hunter Hines, ninth inning home run in the finale, kind of steals victory from the jaws of defeat, to use that old cliche. A lot to like from the state standpoint, both in terms of what this means moving forward, also in terms of what we saw on the field. But the biggest thing for me is that this opens up a realistic path for state to host. It felt like beforehand, it was like a little bit of a, I don't want to say pipe dream, but just kind of like a possibility, but I wasn't ready to call it a very likely thing. Now, yes, you stole a series that, you know, that I didn't think they would win, frankly, just to raise my own hand. And now they're in a lot better position. And to me, that feels like maybe the biggest development and change from week to week in the league.
Yeah. I think Brooks Auger pitching the way he did in game two, that to me was the shift. I did not think they would beat Carter Holton. And not only did Auger pitch well, but Hunter Hines hit a couple of bombs in that game, and Mississippi State was able to take it. And then they jump out in the rubber game and jump out 6-0. And Sanger, Gerangelo Sanger is dealing. I think he had like a one hitter through five or something like that. I mean, just struck out 11. I mean, just totally in control, and then it gets away. And Vanderbilt comes back and ties it, and then they take the lead. And you're thinking, well, Mississippi State just blew a tremendous opportunity. You know, you think about, you know, what Georgia did, you know, was scoring 9 runs in the first and gets beat 19-9. And here's Mississippi State scoring 6, you know, early, and then they get bypassed. It was just kind of that weekend for teams to blow big leads. But then it comes to the ninth inning with 2 outs in the ninth. Hunter Hines goes deep again, man. Just so clutch. And, you know, he's been a guy who's, you know, a lot was expected, and he certainly had moments, but it probably hasn't been, you know, the season a lot of people hoped he would have. But, boy, did he make up for it this weekend. He was so, so big for them. And now, you know, you're looking at it, I mean, 12-9. In conference play, that's the fifth best record in the conference. If you're the fifth best team in the SEC, record wise, typically you host. I know the RPI jumped. It's not where it needs to be, but you know, down the stretch, you still got to go to Arkansas. You win one game at Arkansas, it's going to help your RPI. And then, you know, Alabama's this weekend, not an easy series, but it's at home. You got to like your chances there if you can go to Nashville and win. And then you end the year with Missouri, and it's at home. So, I mean, Missouri may not have anything to play for by that time. So, Mississippi State, it is stacked up. The dominoes are there. You've knocked a few of them down, and there's a few more just kind of teetering. All you need is to finish this drill, and you go from a, you know, Chris Lemonis, who's certainly coaching for his job. I think that's fair to say. During the early part of the season, there was a lot of heat. And now, I mean, they can host a regional and be one of the top 16 teams in the country? Wow. I mean, you have to feel good for that program with all they've been through the last couple of years, the struggles going from the championship and then being the butt of the jokes because, you know, you go from first to worst, and then you don't rebound last year, and then you struggle early this year, and now it's starting to come into focus where your goals, nobody loves hosting a regional more than the folks in Starkville, and that might actually happen. Oh boy, this is a tremendous story. But the flip side of that is Vanderbilt, who's been so good at home. They have been one of the best home teams in the sport, and they drop one, and how do you lose? How do you get over losing one like that? Where you came back, you had this huge deficit, you came back, you took the lead, you've got it. It's two outs in the ninth, your pitcher's dealing, and then their guy runs into one and you lose. And I mean, that's a tough spot because Vanderbilt, I mean, the rest of the year, I mean, they got to go to Georgia. That's not going to be easy. They got Tennessee at home. That's certainly not going to be easy. And then they've got Kentucky, right? And that's on the road, right, Joe? So I think that, Vanderbilt, while it's all there for them to make a run and to get back in this hosting mix, that Sunday loss was really critical to their chances. Hurt their chances to host. They still have a path, but it's narrower than it was, Saturday night.
Yeah. When I was taking notes, ahead of this podcast, I wrote down still not sure what to make of Vanderbilt. And I've actually thought about that. I've actually would edit it to, I think I know exactly what Vanderbilt is. It's just hard for me to come around to that idea. And it's just that this team is not out talenting anyone at this point. And I think we're just kind of so used to, in some form or fashion, Vanderbilt out talenting teams from time to time. And very rarely this season has Vanderbilt, maybe during that Minute Maid tournament. I mean, they got some decent wins there, Texas, they played the Raging Cajuns. Like, they got some good wins there. Maybe that weekend is as close as they've come, but they've never really taken the field this season. And I've watched it and gone, oh, that they're overwhelming.
Yeah, and positionally, I would agree. I mean, they've got some dudes on the mound.
They do. They do. But outside of Carter Holton, I mean, Bryce Cunningham was great last weekend, but it's not like he's been the most consistent guy. Right. I think there's a lot of other teams that at various points, now they might be flawed teams, but there's been times where I could say like, man, if X or Y happens, they're just overwhelming, right? Georgia offensively, Alabama offensively, when they really get going, and those teams are kind of just, middle of the pack SEC teams. But with Vanderbilt,
Andy,
I mean, Vanderbilt, maybe it's just that they're a little more well-rounded. I think I would buy that than Alabama and Georgia, but I just don't, they just haven't been overwhelming in really much of any sense this season. And so I think it kind of is what it is. And to your point, that could still, I mean, hey, they steal a series from Tennessee or Kentucky and they're in business. Right. But that's a tough path. So everything's still pretty in hard, front of them here.
Yeah.
Everything's still in front of them here, but man, like they're going to have, I'll put it this way. They're going to have results these last 3 weeks that there's not a lot of reason for us to expect that to happen given what we've seen the first 11, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how they bounce back in Athens. Cause Georgia's a team that, they can score a lot of runs on you. And that's not Vandy's game, winning games 10-9. So they're going to need to find a way to keep that into 5-4, 6-5 range. If they do that, they got a shot. And I think it's important, after you lose a game in a devastating fashion like that, to be able to have that immediate success so things don't continue to spiral.
Let's move on to Georgia, Texas A&M. I find that series interesting for a number of reasons. I guess first things first, Charlie Condon, record-breaking weekend there. He gets home run number 29 on the season, home run number 54 for his career. Those are both Georgia program records, single season and career, breaking Gordon Beckham's record, both of them.
Yeah.
Good symmetry that the records were broken on the same home run. So one home run chase for Georgia and their sports information department. You're welcome, Christopher Lakos. You didn't have to track two numbers.
Lake's awesome, by the way.
Oh, indeed. Indeed. The dean, well, you know, because Bill, I think Bill is the dean of SEC.
He and Bill can be co-deans. How about that?
But there you go. Yes. The co-deans of the, that's not co, not co-dean, cough syrup. Yeah. The co-deans of, they're the cough syrups of SEC SIDs. Anyway, moving on from that bit of accidental wordplay. So big weekend there for Charlie Condon. This weekend also included maybe the weirdest game all season, right? And anybody who saw it knows what I'm talking about. You know, Georgia's up 9-0, then it's 9-9, like two innings later, and then A&M goes on a 10-0 run to win it in seven innings somehow. So that was
19 unanswered.
Just, I mean, just wild. Well,
You fall down, you fall behind 9-0 in the top of the first. Most people are checking out, man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's over.
Yeah.
What did A&M do? They scored, they answered with 8 in the first inning. 50 something minutes to play the first inning. Yeah. And then went on to mercy rule it. Now, we have a really varied audience, really smart people out there. Somebody hit us on Twitter if you know of someone who led 9-0 and got run ruled. Because I would,
Jeremy Mills, we're looking at you.
Yeah, I would,
Jeremy, if you're listening, can you help us on this one?
Let's go, Millsy. I do think that, you know, A&M, with the way that they swing the bats, man, I mean, that may be the best team in the country. I mean, they're so balanced.
Oh, yeah, I think it is.
That lineup is, you know, I wrote, I was there Friday and I wrote something about this. It's just the difference in their lineup 1-9. Early in the year, it was really good, you know, 1-4, 5, 6 sometimes. Now there's no holes. And those guys at the end of the lineup are on base for those top three murderers row, right? And it's if they pitch enough, and they have been, they've got to continue to do it. But if they continue to pitch enough, I mean, this is a national championship kind of club. I mean, they look really strong right now. And then on the flip side of that, Georgia, I've been impressed with Georgia. I mean, first off, I mean, Condon homered in all three games this weekend. He's, you know, you try to pitch around him, the ball creeps back over the plate and he takes it out of the yard. I mean, it's just that kind of hitter. The thing, though, that really surprised me about Georgia is that they're getting enough pitching. That was the question, right? There were two questions heading into the year about Georgia. One was just the lineup around Condon. Well, that's been answered. Corey Collins and Dylan Goldstein and those guys have come through. And just, would they have enough pitching? And Leighton Finley was really good Friday. Colton Smith was really good Sunday. And they're getting some guys healthy that may be able to answer some of the other spots in the rotation. Brian Zeldin's really good out of the pen. I mean, they have some guys and they have enough numbers that they hope that, you know, so it's like a Chandler Marsh who they repatterned. You know, it's really hard to do that during the season, and they've done it. And he was really good against Clemson Tuesday and not so good at A&M, but there's high hopes for a guy with his upside. So I think I really like where Georgia is. The schedule down the stretch is brutal, but if they can get to 16 wins, they're going to host because their RPI is so good. They get to 15 and they're even in the conversation just because of all the wins that they're going to have. So it's, you know, it's a really, those were two really good teams that really swing it well. And it was, you know, it was a really fun series.
Indeed it was. Yeah. I agreed there. I would take more of A&M Georgia, certainly in Hoover. Mm-hmm. A couple things on Georgia pitching. One, I wish I had made more of a deal of this because now it would have made me look like I really knew what I was talking about. In small doses in leading up to last weekend, I've really liked Colton Smith. Like his stuff is good. It's one of those guys where his ERA hasn't totally matched up with how good he is. His strikeout numbers are frankly fantastic. Let me pull up here real quick. Yeah, it's like, so this is just in conference play. He's thrown 27 and 2/3 innings and he struck out 48. Like, I mean, that's not Hagen Smith numbers, but like, that's pretty doggone close.
Yeah.
Overall, he struck out 69 in 44 innings. Like, Yeah. This dude's been missing bats all year, and his ERA just hasn't totally matched that. And look, I know Georgia's trying to win this year. I mean, they're very likely going to be a regional team this year, but Colton Smith's a sophomore. Like Hoskins is a sophomore. Like there's a pretty good chance if this team is healthier on the mound next season that I, especially with giving Wes Johnson another off season to work with these guys.
And work the portal.
There's a good chance Georgia's pitching staff is like kind of a problem next year for people.
Yeah.
And so Colton Smith, a big part of that. The other pitching item I was going to mention, Mark, is if you're online, you have, I'm sure, seen this. There was a deal in the finale of the series, which was game two of the doubleheader, the game Georgia won to salvage a game in the series. Christian Maracna came in to close the game. There's video out there of him doing something in the bullpen. He is crouched down in a corner of the bullpen. Fast forward to later, there is video of him kind of fiddling, let's call it, with his glove in a way that is not a way you see pitchers like kind of work their glove between batters and between pitches. Yeah. There's also been videos of him doing something similar early in the season. I'm not so naive to be like, oh, nothing could possibly be happening there, right? I'm not going to play Pollyanna. It could be something, but here's what I will say. And this is mostly all I'm interested in saying about it, because like, I don't know, man, like, could it be something? Sure. But there's a lot of folks out there. I saw a lot of people tagging like the NCAA or the SEC in the video. There is no mechanism by which the SEC, even if they wanted to, even if they were convinced that Christian Maracna was using sticky stuff or some substance, there's no mechanism, I don't think, and tell me if I'm wrong, get at me on Twitter, which I know is inviting who knows what, but get at me on Twitter if you know otherwise, if you're certain of it. I know we've got some coaches and administrators who listen to this. I don't feel like there's any mechanism by which they could suspend him, even if they wanted to. He didn't get caught. They didn't ask for a glove check. They didn't eject him. This is different than J.D. Thompson of Vanderbilt 2 weekends ago. He got ejected. Yeah. So yeah, therefore he's suspended.
Right.
Yeah. So if you don't eject him and the opposing coach didn't ask for a check of his glove, if nothing happened, like there's just no mechanism by which you can't suspend someone based on right. videos, even if the videos are damning, right? Like you just can't do that. You may remember last year there were videos that surfaced of a program, maybe tampering, non-SEC program, tampering with bats. And like there weren't suspensions there because again, it's just a video. Like, you know, so you have to actually get caught in the act of whatever it allegedly is. So that's really what I wanted to mention here is like, I'm aware this thing is happening. I'm aware of some of the discourse about it, but I just wouldn't hold your breath. If you think what happened there was something untoward, suspension is not coming unless he gets caught with whatever it is later on in the season.
Right.
Correct. There's just no mechanism by which they can do that right now. I don't think anyway.
Yeah, it was an odd video. I saw it and you don't really know what he's doing. I mean, it could be something innocent or it could be something, you know, mischievous. We really don't know. And that's kind of what your point is, right? And certainly he goes out and absolutely shoves.
I mean, that's the other thing, right? I mean, he shoves against one of the best lineups in the country.
Yeah, he was really damn good. So, I know, but hey, maybe he had that in him all along. We just never know.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe we've all been out here doubting Christian Maracna, you know?
Yeah,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, that's that. I wanted to address it because I know it's out there and I don't want Mark and I to come off like we're being willfully ignorant to the discourse on that.
Gotcha.
But also like, again, I think it's foolhardy to hold your breath that there's going to be some sort of comeuppance from this isolated incident. Okay. Let's move on to Florida and Arkansas.
Oh, wait a second. I'm ready.
That's right. Yeah. Mark just deked me. He did the old Peyton Holt. If you've not seen that play, go find it. You can find it on Twitter, just Peyton Holt on the Twitter search, and I'm sure it'll come up. Chris Burke on the broadcast, he was asked, like, have you ever seen that? And he said, yes, I've seen it. I've never seen it work. So that tells you how rare that is. You feel a little bit, I think it was Brody Donay was the runner
yeah, he
for
was.
Florida. You feel for him a little bit because, you know, gosh, I mean, he's just trying to get a good tag off third base, and you know, it just it happens, right?
Certainly unsuspecting, right?
Correct, correct. I have seen that before. Oh, really? Yeah. Okay.
I have seen it before, and it was pre-video days. And I do think the runner left early on third, and they threw it back to third, and they called him safe, but I really think he left early. But yeah, it's really rare. Yeah, right. I do think that, I mean, it was a, you know, a great IQ play to understand the moment to do it, and because bases were loaded, it was a one-run game. Donay was the tying run, and Florida would have tied it against Arkansas when Holt made that play. So just a, you know, hat tip, right? It was a incredible presence of mind to do that. One thing I do want to mention is it was perfect situation because he was camped under the ball. If you try to do that and you're running to catch it, you're going to miss it, and I'm going to laugh at you, okay? So just all you outfielders out there, if you don't want the highway to Hoover to make fun of you for trying to do the deep play when it doesn't really suit you, you know, suit the opportunity, don't try it unless you're camped under the ball. PSA.
That's a good call. And Mark will laugh at you, and your coach will probably do worse.
Yeah, no doubt.
So make sure you're real confident in your ability there. Yeah. Just in the big picture, a frustrating series for Florida. They win a game, but they lose the other two by one run. And then one was that game with the play with Peyton Holt. And the other, I mean, the other was a Hagan Smith start. So like you just kind of have to chalk that up to like. It was 2-1,
and they had opportunities in it. Right.
Second week in a row, the Hagan Smith start ends in a 2-1 Arkansas win, which is the big picture thing with Arkansas. Like it's a tightrope walk they're doing right now. But like, again, I've said this over and over again. Is their offense really good? No. But ... does that matter? Right. I mean, it's a tightrope walk, but their pitching staff is in both quality and in depth is so much. I mean, the second best is maybe A&M, but we both have questions about their rotation that we don't necessarily have about Arkansas. And Ryan Prager is good, but respectfully, he's not Hagan Smith, right? I don't think A&M has an arm. I mean, Chris Cortez is maybe the closest thing to Gabe Gackle in terms of like the electricity and the stuff, but I would probably take Gackle. So you kind of go on down the line, Auchinbeck and McIntyre, like I'd probably take Auchinbeck in that, you know, head to head. But point being, I've said it again and again and again this season, in this version of college baseball, having a pitching staff that is that much better than whoever the second best is so much bigger of an advantage than being really good offensively. Cause everyone can kind of hit, right? I mean, the ball jumps, you know, home runs go left and right. So like that's dime a dozen, but to pitch like that is a whole different deal.
Yeah. That's a good point. I think with Arkansas, there are a couple things that stand out for me. One is they are so comfortable playing close games because they play so many of them, and they're able to, they know that, hey, we're going to hold the opponent where they're at. We don't need to do a whole lot. We just got to get that one run or get that two, whatever it is in order to distance ourselves. Right. Then the other thing is just how many options there are. Mason Molina didn't pitch this weekend. He was their number two starter, okay? Did you notice? Not really, because they have so many guys that they just come right, left, right, left. Situationally, guys, you know, pitchers who would be key cogs in most, you know, either a rotation, certainly a bullpen, and they're depth pieces, right? They're just one of many, and they don't have to stretch guys out. They don't have to use them, you know, for two innings on Friday and two more on Sunday, because they've just got so many options. And there are very few teams, and I think I can count them on one finger, who can do that. And that's what makes Arkansas so different than everyone else. Will they hit enough? I don't know. But they're going to be in just about every game. They're not going to get beat 10-9 like all these other teams, because they're not going to give up nine. They're going to give up, you know, three or four, and on bad days they may give up six, but they can, the offense is good enough, maybe they can score seven. And I think that's what's going to make them such a I guess a interesting story to follow down, you know, once we get to the postseason, because they're one of those teams that can beat you 2-1 and but they don't have to because they've got so many arms that, you know, if a guy gets shelled early, they've got people that can slam the door and they can still beat you 5-4, right? Or 7-8, you know, 8-7, whatever it happens to be, because they're able to slow things down and win those close games. And one thing I'll say about their offense, and, you know, we all kind of bang on it a little bit, but they've gotten a lot of clutch hits this year. And because they're so confident in these close games, I think they're, 16-3 in 1 or 2 run games, something like that. They just continue to just make the clutch hit. They know they're going to pitch well. And as a result, I mean, this is one of the best teams in the sport and maybe the best team. I mean, it's, for me, it's them and A&M. And you know, Tennessee is right there kind of jockeying. But those are the best three teams in the sport. And I don't really have a concern about Arkansas until they get to Omaha.
I watching the game over the weekend, I put this in our internal WhatsApp chat at D1 mm-hmm. Baseball, is I'm always going to be on the Arkansas train in terms of liking them as a team this year because of things like what we saw in, I think it was game 1 of the doubleheader, Mark. Yeah. Where they, you know, they bring in Christian Fouch late in the game and he's like their 6th best guy in the bullpen. And the dude's out there like putting 101 on the black.
Yeah.
That's their, I mean, to be respectfully, like he's kind of a tertiary piece in the bullpen, mm-hmm. right? Like Jake Faraday's the same way. Like Jake Faraday's running up there high 90s and he's pitched in like 7 games all year or something. Like 10. Sorry, I just looked at it. He's thrown 7 innings. Yeah. The depth of stuff is just incredible. And it's not like Christian Fouch comes in and throws 101 and he's spraying it. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. he's putting it in good spots, and that kind of depth is just not something other teams have. It just isn't.
Yeah, and those guys can just come in and go max effort. There's no concern about, hey, I've got to go 3 innings, okay? So I may need to save something. They may only pitch to 1 or 2 batters. So they're just, I mean, it's just, it's really not fair, right? How many good pitchers the Razorbacks have.
Hey, everyone. We're going to take a quick break from our discussion to hear a couple ads from our sponsors.
Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
Hey guys, Conan O'Brien here to tell you about some of the stranger things we've been doing recently on my podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Recently, we had an episode where I sat down with some of the writers that I worked with on Conan O'Brien Must Go. That's my travel show on Max. And we talked about everything that goes into those shows and a lot of very insane anecdotes from our travels and adventures. There's another episode you might want to check out where I discuss with my physician, Dr. Arroyo, about my experience on Hot Ones. We talk about my near-death experience and his complete inability to help me because he may or may not be a real doctor. That's just some of the stuff that's been going on, and if you feel up to it, check it out. So catch up on all things I've been up to on Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, wherever you get your podcasts.
Meet Gail. Her thing is being a supermom, and supermom has a lot on her super-sized plate.
Ain't that the truth?
But at Walmart Pharmacy, supermom recently got her whole family updated on all their vaccines.
We knocked it out during a grocery run. No appointment.
That's next-level supermom. From pneumonia to shingles, HPV, and more, get no-cost vaccinations from an expert pharmacist where you already shop. Welcome to an easier pharmacy. Welcome to your Walmart. $0 copay with most insurances. State age and health restrictions may apply.
If you want to bring coziness into your life, You turn to Barefoot Dreams. Now celebrating 30 years of coziness, Barefoot Dreams is the originator of everyone's favorite Luxe Home blanket. There's a reason why Barefoot Dreams has been on Oprah's favorite things list 6 times. Dressing head to toe in Barefoot Dreams is the key to comfort, as its ultra-soft robes, loungewear, and accessories are each made with premium materials. Get 15% off your first purchase at barefootdreams.com with the code PODCAST15.
Let's move on to Kentucky, South Carolina, SEC East showdown. We talk about weird games. Like, if it wasn't the Georgia A&M 19-9 game, there were two games in this series that were among the most bizarre games I've seen all season.
Yeah.
The most bizarre, the middle game, which was the one game Kentucky won, 15-13. It was 6-1 South Carolina. Then it was 12-6 Kentucky. And then it was 12-11 Kentucky, and then it was 15-11, and then it was 15-30. Like, it's just, it was like a basketball game in terms of like the runs back and forth, you know. But a couple things came out of that for me. One is we saw over the weekend why, even though it's not necessarily, we don't think of it on the level of Tennessee's lineup or Texas A&M's lineup, and I understand why. South Carolina's lineup is dangerous in its own way, because if I were Dan Rozell, Kentucky's pitching coach, or heck, for that matter, just a Kentucky fan watching those games, I would have found it so frustrating that their pitchers are making pretty good pitches, but we know the SEC zone for TrackMan reasons and what have you is smaller than it has been in years past. Yeah. The last few years have been fairly small. And so the Kentucky pitchers are throwing pitches just off the corner. They're not getting called strikes. South Carolina refuses to swing at them. And the minute the ball leaks over the plate at all, South Carolina puts it in play. Exactly. And so South Carolina just has, I thought it was a great approach by South Carolina's hitters. And I think we probably end up crediting Monty Lee on that, their hitting coach, that they're willing to, like, maybe, you know, I think they're just willing to say, like, we might strike out looking occasionally on a borderline pitch, but generally speaking, we're not going to swing at borderline pitches, especially not early in the count. Mm-hmm. And, but the minute there's a mistake, boom, like, they just punished it. Dom Nyman had a bad start. Mason Moore had a bad start. They were all over every one of Kentucky's bullpen pitchers, even Johnny Hummel, who's been great this year. And that's the other part of what I took from this, is that Kentucky's pitching staff has not held up well the last two weekends against the two best lineups they've seen this season. And that was a concern going into the season. And it kind of looked like maybe Kentucky had figured it out to some degree and they were overachieving maybe expectations. But now I do think we have to reassess Kentucky's pitching, because again, the last 2 weeks they faced the two best lineups they've seen and it's not gone particularly well.
Yeah. I think, you know, first with South Carolina, I mean, they draw so many walks, they see a lot of pitches. And then if they hit for power, a lot of times they're men on base because they draw the walks. And that's something that you look around the league, it's a solo home run league. And South Carolina has been able to kind of buck that trend a little bit and have theirs with men on base. And I think that's how you put up the crooked numbers, of course. So that was an incredibly big win for their hosting chances. It gives them a shot to really get above 500 in the conference. And because of that, you know, I think South Carolina is in pretty good position. I mean, the schedule remaining is difficult as it is. You know, we could just kind of record that and say it. Everybody has a difficult schedule. It is difficult for South Carolina as well. But it's there. They have a path that they can get in and host, and maybe even get, you know, one of those, you know, certainly top 12 in there, the way things are going right now. But then with Kentucky, you know, we all wondered what would happen. They got off to such an amazing start in the conference. We knew that the last 5 weeks were going to be more challenging. Would they be able to sustain it, or at what level would they sustain it? They've got Arkansas next week, and then they go to Florida, who's going to be, you know, begging for wins. And then they got Vandy, who's also going to be, you know, trying to host. I mean, Kentucky, while they have such a huge start, head start, If they were to drop all five of these series down the stretch, are they still a top eight seed? You know, even though their record would say they are, maybe they aren't because of the momentum down the stretch. You know, it's kind of one of those things. So they've got to find a way to kind of to at least pick one of these off, right? And that would be the way to do it. I mean, they weren't that far off from winning this series. Certainly the Friday game, and Pusser was really good on Friday. They couldn't hold it.
Yeah. I could make the argument they should have won that game. I think that's fair. 3-run lead with your closer in the game who, you know, has been good.
Right.
Yeah.
He just couldn't hold it. Yeah. So maybe that, you know, that's, but it did kind of concern me that the game three wasn't competitive. They just kind of got thumped. And, you know, that's not a Kentucky-like effort because they're in every game. They're a high-energy team that fights, you know, for 27 outs, and for them to get thumped was a bit, I guess, different. You know, we certainly didn't expect it. So again, next week's another week, and with Arkansas coming in to Kentucky Proud Park, it will be nuts. That'll be, you know, those are the two leaders in the SEC, and they're going to play, and we don't always get that. So I'm really excited for that. And it also kind of gives Kentucky a chance to kind of regroup, come in. Hey, you got Big Bad Arkansas coming in. Hagen Smith's coming in. But we're good too. So we're at home. And I really expect that to be a competitive series. Certainly won't be a sweep either way. And I kind of expect it's going to come down to that last few innings on Sunday to decide who wins that series.
Yeah, if you're Kentucky, you can at least take solace in the fact that it's just a very different type of team coming to Lexington this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the offense is such that, like we talked about, you're not expecting Arkansas. I mean, look, I'm going to say this, and then Arkansas is going to score, you know, 38 runs in three games or something. But you're not expecting it to be an offense that does the things that Tennessee did 2 weekends ago in Lexington, right? In the Saturday and Sunday games. So that helps. Big ballpark. You're at home. So it is an opportunity for Kentucky to kind of recenter a little bit. And I mean, let's face it. I think I said a few weeks ago, I don't want to put limits on what Kentucky can do, because I feel like that's an easy thing for us to do. However, I still would have said, hey, they're going to hit a skid at some point. Like nobody gets through an entire, you know, Arkansas lost a series to Alabama a few weeks ago, right? A&M started off their season with a loss to Florida, their SEC season, right? So like everyone goes through it at some point. And it just so happens Kentucky's is coming right now, you know, because the competition has been good, but they're also just not playing as well. Like it's both of those things.
And one of the things, and, you know, people outside the SEC hate when people like me say this, is one of the things is when you go through a skid like this, there's no get right week. It's just another haymaker coming your way. So that's the difference, right? There are other leagues where you might have stretches. They just don't last as long. And I think that's where you've got to get right while you're playing a team that's just as good as you are. And that's I guess that's the nuance that is different about life in the SEC.
Yeah. We will cruise through kind of these last three series here. Bama and Ole Miss.
Yeah.
A big one for Bama winning that series. And Bama to me kind of typifies what we've talked about a couple of times throughout this podcast, where, I mean, they're sitting at 9-12 in the league and they're so much better than that. Mm-hmm. And honestly, it's really impressive what they've done with the pitching injuries they've had. I mean, you talk about cobbling it together. It reminds me a little bit, and this is going to be a comparison that neither side of this rivalry is going to love, but it reminds me a little bit of Auburn last year where, you know, they were always better than their record and they got hot and then they finished where they finished, ended up hosting. It feels a little like that to me, because like we look at the mound and it's like, you know, Hess isn't particularly good, and folks keep waiting for like, is Greg Ferone for real? And I think the answer at this point is yes, but then, okay, Zane Adams is a freshman. How long can he really do this? There's just all the kinds of questions about it. And yet they're taking care of business against the team they should. And last weekend was just one more example.
Yeah. They scored 30 runs this weekend, three games. Justin LeBron is absolutely becoming a star in front of our eyes. I mean, I've told this to people. When I saw him opening weekend, he was a great defensive shortstop that I thought might hit 240. He might hit two or three home runs, right? Just run into some. And right now, he is a legitimate power threat. I think he's got, what, 9-10 home runs already. He's hitting well over 300. He's sitting in the three hole. I mean, this is a freshman shortstop who was supposed to be defense first, who's absolutely just becoming one of the best freshmen in the country. You throw in, you know, what Gage Miller's doing. I mean, it's a really good lineup. If they pitch at all, they're a problem. And it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, they go to Mississippi State. That'll be a fun series because Mississippi State's playing well. Alabama's playing well. And then they finish with – Alabama finishes with LSU and Auburn. They've got a chance here to kind of, you know, make sure that they make the postseason because I think with their RPI, 13 wins gets them in. They're 9-12 right now. So that's just 4 wins. I think they can do better than that, right, with the schedule ahead. So it'll be really interesting to see if their pitching holds up so that they're able to reach those goals.
And for Ole Miss, it makes the path to getting back to potentially being a tournament team even tougher. It's not totally impossible. Obviously, the RPI is still in good shape. It's a top 30 RPI. So if you get enough wins, you'll get there. And all we have to do is go back 2 years, and Ole Miss was 7-14 2 years ago. Now, I wrote this in something I wrote over the weekend that, you know, Ole Miss can take solace in the fact that recent history is littered with examples of teams that were in a similar hole that dug their way out and made the postseason. The bad news is that there are many more teams that didn't do that when they were in that hole. There's just no other way to say it. And the path is just, it's just tough at 7-14. It's also just really crowded in that part of the SEC. You've got a series with Auburn this weekend. So you'll like that. That's a winnable series. The LSU series to end the season is a winnable series. Texas A&M between those two, less so, I think, goes without saying. But at this point, it's just hard to look at Ole Miss and confidence in them winning those quote unquote winnable series is definitely waning at this point.
Yeah. And they need to do more than just win at this point. They need to sweep somebody, and they're just not pitching well enough to do that.
Right. Right. Yeah. And that's a good segue because Auburn and LSU, Auburn has had two series in a row now, Mizzou and Auburn, where they could have really used a sweep and didn't get either. And I think you say the same thing about LSU that, you know, they probably need to sweep somebody. And right now they're just not pitching well enough to win 3 games in a weekend. It doesn't feel like, and the offense has its issues too, but the pitching depth is I think more to, and this is a world where like Gage Jump is pitching really well right now. So they've actually gotten some better pitching, but it just hasn't been enough to win 3 games in a weekend.
Yeah. I saw them Sunday and I'm, writing a story on LSU's path to the postseason that should drop sometime Tuesday. I do think that there is a path. It's a lot narrower because they didn't get those sweeps or either of those sweeps. And the thing is, I mean, Gage Jump's pitching really well. Luke Holman has been their best pitcher all year. Those two guys are good. They just don't know what they're going to do, you know, to get those outs in the third game. Nate Ackenhausen was injured. I think he'll be fine to come back next week. And Griffin Herring has been great out of the bullpen. It's just, you know, if you use him to close, he can't pitch every day, right? You need some other guys to come through. Christian Little has been good his last 2-3 outings, which is encouraging for them. They need someone to step through, and he's always been a guy, you know, that's teased you. And that's what they're looking for. But it's, you know, they're the defending national champions. They're really talented roster. Should they get into a regional, they could provide some problems. I just don't know that they're going to be able to get there because they've got to sweep people to do it. I think, you know, they've got A&M this weekend at home. If you win one, you're probably feeling pretty good about that. You go to Alabama, who's been really good at home. I mean, they beat Arkansas at home. They gave A&M fits at home. They beat Tennessee at home. They beat South Carolina at home. Those are all teams better than LSU. That's going to be a challenging place to go in and win. And then they close at home against Ole Miss. I mean, at that point, you might have to sweep just to kind of show a pulse going into Hoover, right? To have a shot. So it's narrow. They needed to sweep against Auburn. They needed to sweep, or they need to sweep against Missouri. They got neither. And as a result, it's a needle they're trying to thread. And to do that, they're going to have to play a lot better. They're going to pitch better. Somebody's going to step up that maybe, you know, that hasn't done it yet. And, you know, that's how you carve your legacy, right? You want to be that guy. Well, here's your, you know, someone's going to get that opportunity. So it's going to be fun to see. And I guess on the Auburn side, they're not completely dead, but it's pretty close. I mean, the Sunday win helped. They can try to get into Hoover. But because they play Ole Miss and Missouri, two teams ahead of them, if they were to have a lot of success, and I don't mean just winning the series, you're going to have to probably sweep one or both of them. And then it can get really interesting as they host Alabama in the final weekend. You're on mute.
Yeah, I fixed it there. I caught it. You blew up my spot. The listeners didn't right, know I was bad. Muted, Mark, until you my said bad. Something. It just threw me under the bus. Jeez. Auburn
I
is to your point.
You to pull a Kindle and talk for 20 minutes.
Well, that's
right?
True. Yeah. Kindle's done some, what I assume are just brilliant monologues that have never been heard.
It's just, it's a logic society needed that never got.
That's right. You're exactly right. Auburn might, to your point, Auburn isn't quite dead, but the attending physician is getting ready to call it. Yeah, basically.
He's on call, right?
Yeah, they have Ole Miss this weekend. We'll know a lot more about what we're looking at after this week for both teams, frankly.
Yeah.
Like a bizarrely big series, just for because if Auburn doesn't get a result here, then it's pretty much elementary.
It's the sickos game of the week.
Exactly. Thank you. For very online fans of college football, you'll know what we refer to there when we talk about the sickos. But yeah, because if Auburn doesn't get a result there, you've lost tiebreakers to just about everyone you'd need tiebreakers with. Like, it just gets hard. So it's already hard, frankly. But okay, last series was Tennessee, Missouri. Don't want to. I mean, it's a sweep for Tennessee, and I don't want to give that short shrift. But I can't help but think that my big takeaway here is that Mizzou managed to hold Tennessee to three runs twice in Knoxville. And maybe it was just a weekend where Tennessee's offense just wasn't, for whatever reason, clicking. You're not going to be as hot as they've been recently forever. But I don't know how you couldn't come away and be like, my goodness, like that's as well as anybody has pitched Tennessee all season.
Yeah, Missouri pitched great and did it without Pimentel. He didn't throw at all. So I do think that, you know, if you look at how Missouri continues to compete. I mean, they had 2 1-run games on the road in Knoxville, 2 low scoring, well played games. This is a team that, you know, they're a game out of Hoover right now. Don't be surprised if, you know, if they're able to knock off somebody and sneak into Hoover as the team that nobody expected to be there.
They've got no pressure
before. right. And then from a Tennessee side, you know, one side you're thinking that, hey, where are all the home runs? But I guess the other part is they won a game with pitching.
Yep.
Okay. They won a game where they didn't just bludgeon people. And, you know, kind of like what we talked about with Arkansas, that gives you confidence, right? When you get into those games, which you will at some point, you know, down the stretch or in the postseason, hey, we can win a 3-2 game. Remember how we handled Missouri. So, yeah, if you're looking for silver linings, that is definitely one, because they pitched well and they made the clutch plays in order to hold that lead.
It's almost like Tim Jamison knows what he's doing as a pitching coach. It's almost like that.
Yeah,
you know? One could draw that conclusion. Yeah. But yeah, no, I'm with you about Tennessee. I said that on one of my weekend waypoints episodes over the weekend that, like, I'm sure there are Tennessee fans out there that are thinking, like, goodness gracious, we're 2 1-run games with Mizzou at home, but. Mm-hmm. I think that's a muscle that you might need to flex in the postseason, especially if you get to Omaha. I think you make a good point about the muscle memory of, hey, we've done this before. And sure, that the offense we're playing today is probably, especially if it's in Omaha, is better than Mizzou's offense. Sure. But you've been in a situation like that and you can call back on that. And I think that can be helpful. So yeah, kudos to Tennessee. It might not have been pretty, but you get a sweep and a sweep is a sweep. And they're in great shape. Yeah. So certainly while it might not have been the type of sweep that you wanted as a Tennessee fan, a sweep you will certainly take in the SEC.
Yep.
All right, Mark, that feels like an episode. We covered a lot of ground there. We're coming up on just about an hour. So that feels like we've covered it there. And we have stolen enough of our listeners' times here. They're probably tired of hearing us drone on. So we'll cut them a break here. And if they want more, trust me, with Hoover coming up and while we're in Hoover, you will hear plenty more of us. that is we're not going to be in short supply.
Yeah. If you like to listen ball, we like to talk ball. So
that's right.
You're in good hands.
That's a great point. Yeah. And somebody mentioned this, our buddy, Charlie Sanders, who we met last year in Hoover. Hi Charlie, if you're listening, messaged me on Twitter, ask about Hoover stuff. We are not doing a live show this year like we did last year. If you were on board with us this time last year, we did one. We're just kind of playing around with different approaches to covering the SEC tournament. And Mark and I think I can speak for both of us. We intend to do this for a long time, and we're just trying to find the right thing, the right way to cover the SEC tournament that gives you guys as subscribers and as listeners the most value. So we're going to try some different things this year. We haven't totally talked about that and hashed that out yet, so we have nothing to tell you about, but no live show, just because we're going to try to do some different stuff. And that's all it is. We very well could have done it. We would have been happy to do it again this year. We enjoyed our time at Brock's Gap. But we're going to do some different stuff. I'll break news a little bit to Mark that I think I would like to do some sort of preview show, maybe the night before, and maybe we'll do it as a live stream as opposed to a recording. And then we can do like a little bit of a Q&A with the comments. We can rope Kendall or someone into coming on to kind of, give another perspective. So we'll see. I mean, but that's something I would like to do because I know I've enjoyed the back and forth I get on Weekend Waypoints. And I think right before the SEC tournament, it would be a good opportunity for you listeners to ask us about not only SEC tournament stuff, but bubble stuff, hosting stuff, national seed stuff. Because Lord knows Mark will be ears deep in that.
No doubt.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is going to do it for this edition of Highway to Hoover, a production of SEC. nb1baseball.com. Thank you to PitchLogic for sponsoring this and every episode of Highway to Hoover. Thank you to Mark, as always, for joining me, and thank you, the listeners, for listening. We'll talk to y'all soon.
The Highway to Hoover podcast is part of the SiriusXM Sports Podcast Network. If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear more, please give a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe today wherever you stream your podcasts.
Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
Meet Gail. Her thing is being a supermom, and supermom has a lot on her super-sized plate.
Ain't that the truth?
But at Walmart Pharmacy, supermom recently got her whole family updated on all their vaccines.
We knocked it out during a grocery run. No appointment.
That's next-level supermom. From pneumonia to shingles, HPV, and more, get no-cost vaccinations from an expert pharmacist where you already shop. Welcome to an easier pharmacy. Welcome to your Walmart. $0 copay with most insurances. State age and health restrictions may apply.